Information Network. I'm John Grimes.
So, people think a man is made out of mud. A fool man is made out of muscle and blood. And when he gets home, he wants to die. Some manifestation that make him smile. Six of them will make you forget. Now, I'm too hard of a man. Just relax and listen wherever you are.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is May 17th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We'll spend the next hour with Bernie Reimier. He's best known for his photographs of Alaska, particularly Fairbanks, and is the biggest liar in Alaska for his story, Moose Creek Charlie and the Quick Freeze. This morning's presentation is sponsored by Two Rivers Lodge, the Riverboat Discovery, Denali Chiropractic Center, Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Larson's Jewelers, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank, and Last Frontier Realty. And now, Doris Stevenson and Paul Rosenthal with Paul Rosenthal's Alaska Flag Song. Welcome to the program, Bernie Reimier. Nice to have you in the studios.
Sure, good to be here, Gail.
Pretty nice day outside for your visit back to Fairbanks.
Yeah, but I'm shaking in my boots, and but otherwise I'm completely composed.
It's 49 degrees outside, not too bad. Now, one of your daughters brought you into the studio today, and you have three daughters in Fairbanks.
Three daughters.
And you're up here visiting.
And a son.
Oh, and a son.
Yeah.
Now you're here visiting because you don't live here any longer.
Right. Uh-huh.
And you live where?
I live in Springville, California.
Uh-huh. Now you first came up here in what year?
It would be, actually, if you want to count, say Alaska, it was 42 April.
Uh-huh.
If you want to say Fairbanks, January of 43.
Uh-huh. Well, now that was with the, not the first time, but you came up here and got into the military.
Yeah.
Kind of how.
Yeah.
Part of it started.
And I came to Sitka and worked at Sitka in 42 with Everett Hepp and I hitchhiked to Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And we went to Sitka. We worked there. And he came up to Fairbanks and went to work as the head of the Office of Price Administration. And I stayed down there. He said, why don't I come up and get out of the rain? And so I came up here to 35 below.
Okay. Well, let's see, the story starts, your life begins on January 1st of 1914.
Right.
In Chandler?
Chandler, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Now, what were your folks doing there? How did your family end up
in
Arizona?
I was awfully young then when I was born, and I just can't remember just what my dad even did then, what he was doing in Arizona, because we didn't stay long. I left there when I was real young, and I can't remember our living in Washington, state of Washington, or in the state of Idaho for a little while, but I do remember starting the first grade in Porterville, California. So really, that's just about all I can remember of the early uh-huh. days.
Well, that was about 1920.
That would have been 1920.
Uh-huh. And through 1932.
Right.
Now, did you have other brothers and sisters?
I have four brothers and one sister. And three of my brothers were up here in 55, and they were the Western band, the Rainier Trio. And they sounded just like the Sons of the Pioneers. And it's very unfortunate that that Raymond Laxo that just passed away.
Yeah,
oh. He was hired those boys, and they really thrilled the crowds with their music during 55, during the spring of 55.
She was.
And I came up to see Raymond, and I didn't realize he was ill, and then now I won't be able to see him at all because he passed away just the other day.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So.
And he had hired.
He hired my brothers. They come up, and they really were good on violin, bass fiddle, and guitar, and they really were good.
Huh. Where did they play?
Well, they played at the town club in Fairbanks. They played at the Chino Bar, and the fiddling brother,
uh-huh.
the youngest brother, played at KFRB. I know that's a bad word to you.
Oh,
but
no, that's fine.
Okay, I'm just kidding. KFRB TV, he was on that program with Dub Haynes and Johnny Cox and Mike Young on a steel guitar,
uh-huh.
and then my brother Graham.
Mm-hmm. She was. Now, did you photograph them?
I got lots of 100 pictures of them almost playing at the Chino Bar. Yeah.
Huh. Well, you are really very well known for your photography, and it's coming more to light now with the Daily News Miner printing
mm-hmm.
your photographs.
Now, well, I got to thank them for making the pictures, having Fairbanks see those pictures that they wouldn't have seen otherwise. They've been in the files all these years.
Now, a person might think that you spent your life as a professional photographer making a living at that,
yeah,
but
I never did.
No.
Really, I worked for a photo studio in Berkeley, California. Made a little bit there for a year or so, but you want to remember that back there, my top pay was $120 a month as a photo technician in the darkroom and a salesman. So
your collection is based on your own personal interest in photography,
yeah,
and recording events, though.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when did it start? Were you a little boy when you started thinking about...
Probably when I started roaming the mountains. And
Wait, we should say what roaming the mountains. Now, back
in Sierra Nevadas, uh-huh, I loved the mountains. I'd go out with a burro and spend 2 weeks at a time with my camera and the burro and a fishing rod. And so when I started like that trip to Mount Whitney, where I took made the two world record trips up there,
yes,
and I titled a story to the top of Mount Whitney with a box camera, and you'll have to say that the box camera started my career off in photography.
Gee, and just a little old fashioned box.
Yeah.
I've seen it in the photograph of this
and
article.
They,
that you have.
They took remarkable pictures, but nothing like your cameras of today.
Uh huh. And you married in 1932.
32, right? First time.
Helen.
Let's keep track of the times now. That's number one.
Uh-huh. And you had three children.
Three children. Mm-hmm. That would be Sharon Robbins of Manteca, Edward Rainier, who lives in Orangevale, uh-huh, I think, Orangevale, mm-hmm, California, by Sacramento, and Ricky... Or Rick Rainier, who was at 22 Mile on the Chena Hot Springs Road, and that's where they held the Soltis, is that the way you pronounce that, for uh-huh, the last two summers.
Huh.
So he owned the property that was on.
There's kind of an interesting story that you made Ripley's Believe It or Not.
I get awfully confused when I talk about the Ripley's thing, because, as you know, that I did marry my stepsister. My mother-in-law was my stepmother, yeah. Her uh-huh father-in-law Oh, see, I'm getting confused. Yeah. All but I my father and I married mother and daughter on Thanksgiving Day, 1932.
My goodness.
And if we go any further, I know that it's going to be difficult for me to try to figure out, keep track of it.
We'll take our first break here to acknowledge a couple of our sponsors, Two Rivers Lodge and the Riverboat Discovery.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Meet a pioneer. KFAR Radio is proud of this show, and we're proud of our sponsors. Take it from Ag Baba, folks. One of the greatest pleasure trips you'll ever take is a trip up the Chena and Tanana Rivers aboard the Riverboat Discovery. It's scenic, it's fun, it's a little adventure back into Alaska's past, a real riverboating adventure, guided and informed by lifetime pioneer Alaskans, the Binkley family. The Binkleys, three generations of riverboat captains on Alaskan waters, whose knowledge and love of Alaska is unsurpassed. Try the Riverboat Discovery, and when your trip is complete, you'll feel like we do here at KFAR. It's a joy to speak of the Riverboat Discovery, and it's a pleasure to do business with the Binkleys.
And by the way, the Riverboat Discovery begins its season this coming Monday. Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. I'm Gail Malloy. My guest is Bernie Reinier. Well, we should go back to that story. You went to the top of Mount Whitney with a box camera. That's what you called your... Uh-huh. Now, that was quite a big event, too, at the time. That had never been done before.
Well, I presume maybe it didn't get the notoriety that it did when we went, because we were doing an endurance record. We were walking 144 miles from the west side of the Sierras to the top of Whitney, spending the night on top, and walking all the way back, 144 miles. Frank Adams and I did it in 4 days, 2 hours and a half, and Freeman Douglas and I did it in 36 in 3 days, 9 hours and three quarters. So we broke the second trip, we broke the first record.
So that was 1932 and 36?
33 and 36.
Uh-huh.
Frank, uh-huh.
And I see lots of photographs of you as about 18, 19 years old, I guess.
Yeah, I was, and only 112 pounds, and my pack weighed one quarter of my weight. So I got rid of part of the pack in a hurry.
Ooh, boy, that's quite a story. Well, the 30s, what would you do other than the 30s as far as an occupation?
I was with the Civilian Conservation Corps. That's nothing like the CCC that you hear of today in California or around the states.
Uh-huh.
This was where FDR took all the boys that he could find that wanted to participate, took them off of the streets and out of the pool halls, and we went to the forests and built trails and built snow fences and just did everything in the forest that we could. And it was really about one of the most pleasant experiences of my life was the CCC.
Oh, you
and that's where I had a little dark room and continued my photography in that in a little tiny cubby hole of a closet. Doing photography.
In your home?
At the camp.
At the camp?
At the camp. Mm-hmm.
Did you take any training in this? Anybody show you how to do it?
No, just learned right from being in a dark room with three trays and a roll of film and a makeshift printer. That's what it went to on up to the Army when I had the real nice dark rooms, worked in the dark rooms and of the Army and things like that. So I learned with no instruction from any book or teacher at all.
And most of your work, or if not all of it, is black and white.
Yeah, everything is black and white.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you happen to come to Alaska?
Well, I told Everett Hepp and I, he's retired now from Superior Court as a judge.
And where was this?
We're talking now about Oakland, California.
Okay.
And I called him up. We tried on numerous occasions to get up to Seattle and come up on a fishing boat. Mm-hmm. All right. We never succeeded because I was a 112-pound weakling, and he was a brawny, strong man, And so they took one look at me and said, no dice, you can't cut the mustard. So he would always go back to the portable with me, and he didn't want to see me left standing on the dock and him sailing away to Alaska. So on April 12th, 1942, I told Everett, he was working, I think, for Metropolitan Life Insurance in the legal department. I said, if you want to go to Alaska, you have your pack ready to go, because I'm gonna. If I have to walk all the way, I'm going to Alaska. So next day he was ready, and we threw our packs aboard a freight train, and by golly, we were on our way. And we ended up in Juneau about May 9th.
What do you mean, threw your packs aboard a freight train? You just hopped it?
You just hopped a freight train.
And you didn't
train.
Buy a ticket?
Oh, heck, no. That would be, in those days, well, he could have, but naturally, we wanted to make an adventure out of it.
Uh-huh.
And there's no better way than to start by riding a freight car, doing it and hitching rides clear up to Prince Rupert. And then we bought a ticket on either the North Sea or the North Land.
Both of you were in your 20s.
Yeah, we would be. I'm 15 months older than Everett Hale.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were no longer married at this time, so
no,
I was kind
no,
of
not,
striking
no.
out in a new adventure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. Brand new.
No.
And
Hep was married, though.
Hep was married.
Yeah. And he...
And he would send for his wife later,
uh-huh.
after we got up and established ourselves.
Now, where'd you find your first job?
Well, Seams Drake, a Puget Sound Construction Company. We went in there, we thought we had a job when we went in, but we found out that everybody had a job but Everett Hep and I.
Oh.
We had gotten in the wrong line, and everybody had been hired in Juneau, so here we were landing in Sitka with a whole bunch of already hired employees, and here we stood waiting for our name to be called, and we were without a job. But I was trying to, Al Seeliger, who was up here years and years with FE Company. He was happened to be the personnel director. He didn't know us, we didn't know him, but he hired us on the spot. So that's how easy it was to get a job back in the war years.
Huh. Well, yeah, 42.
42.
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
Well, you stayed there for a while.
Well, yeah, I stayed there clear until January when Everett wrote a letter and says, come up here to Fairbanks, where there's no rain. He got kind of tired of the rain in Sitka. So he left in August to come up and be the head of the OPA, Office of Price Administration, where they had to regulate the prices within the state,
mm-hmm.
and ration and all that sort of thing. And so he took that job, and I followed on January 25th, and that's when I run into the, come in on... Pan American C-47, cold. That was before they had the heat in the cabin of that amounted to anything. And I arrived at 35 below zero, and in just a suit of clothes. I didn't even have a heavy coat. So that was my initiation to Fairbanks.
You weren't prepared for that at all. You had no idea.
And with a metal tripod and a camera on my shoulder.
Oh God.
So I did it the hard way.
January. Well, what did you do then?
I went to live with the Heps.
Uh-huh.
And
his wife was here by
then? Yeah, his wife was here then, and I went to live with them until I could get a job, and he got me a job with Herb Pickering at Consumers Co-op.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked there until the Army found out, or the government found out, that I was no longer employed on a national defense project, and bingo, they didn't have me right away, and I went to Ladd Field on July 2nd and became part of the Air Force in the photographic department.
Huh. Do you by any chance remember the first photograph you took here, the first series of photographs?
Well, you mean of Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Well, my goodness, I started right out banging in every direction with that speed graphic. And I wouldn't to even hazard a guess. I suppose that you could figure that maybe that last picture that was in the interior scrapbook of the news miner, the one showing the spring breakup, of showing all that water and mm-hmm. everything just almost drowned there at the intersection of Illinois and where the depot was. But then, really, I took some pictures of the winter scenes, too, before mm-hmm. then. So it almost started immediately. I just mm-hmm. started banging away at even a pile of snow attracted uh-huh. me then.
So when you were in the Air Force got you, they just, obviously, you told them about this hobby that you had.
Yeah.
And they put you in the photo department.
Yeah, all I had to do was give them my experience with two photo supply stores
uh-huh.
and my pictures that I had was enough to satisfy them that maybe there was some potential there.
And you were sent to overseas duty.
Yeah, I had to serve overseas, and they sent me to Nashville, Tennessee, and I thought that was a pretty bad start right at the beginning.
That's pretty weird.
That is weird.
And you fought the Battle of the Chena River, though.
We called it the Battle of the Chena, and I survived that without getting shot at.
No, what is that? What's the story?
It's just we had to make light of the fact that we weren't overseas fighting with the enemy. So if anybody asked us if we served in any battles, we served in the Battle of the Chena. That was the only thing that we could say. And it meant nothing at all, except that we just had this answer some way, you know, so.
Because you started at an overseas station.
The closest thing we came to the battle was the Russian soldiers' fires coming in and picking up the P-39s and flying them back to Russia.
Uh-huh.
That's about as close to the war as we ever got.
What sort of photography did you do in the military?
Well, I photographed anybody of importance that might come up, you know, generals and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And if there was an accident, and maybe some technical work, broken parts on an airplane that had to be photographed.
Now, they have your photographs. I mean, they still
I presume. Uh-huh. I presume that those have all gone on a file, uh-huh. you know. But then you see there was other photographers, too. Many photographers shared the kind of work that I did.
Sure. Where were you when you got out of the military then?
I was in McClellan Field, I was in Nashville when the war was over and when both the Japanese and the Germans were defeated. Then bingo, they started letting a lot of us out. Probably they let the poorest soldiers out first, and I was probably one of those. I went to McClellan Field, Sacramento, and there on October 18th, and isn't October 18th Alaska Day? I think it is. I was mm-hmm. released on October 18th, 1945.
Huh. And at that time you wanted to come back up here?
Yeah. Then I wasn't intending to come right back, but then I heard over the radio that Fairbanks had a great big fire that destroyed the whole half a city block, clear up to the side of the Empress Theater.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, my golly, just that alone, the mention of Fairbanks and the winter that they're going through, made me homesick, and I came right up. And Howard Mackey put me to work salvaging the stuff in this old Smith gun store hardware. And that's where I got my first job, you might say, after returning.
Meet the Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not Shop is beautiful. Fine linen, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square.
Many years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. the new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and first president Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first board of trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
Alaska's spirit will never die. It lives on in second-generation Alaskans like Dr. Carol Davis of Denali Chiropractic Clinic.
Sponsoring Meet a Pioneer gives Carol an opportunity to show her pride in being an Alaskan and pride in being a member of the world's largest drugless healing profession. Becoming a chiropractor meant years of demanding study, a period of internship, and then meeting tough licensing standards. She's happy to talk about chiropractic with anyone interested in learning more about it. Just call 456-5252 or stop by and see Dr. Carol Davis at 1018 College Road on the east edge of Kramer's Field. Now back to our program, Meet a Pioneer.
Welcome back to Meet a Pioneer. My guest is Bernie Reinier. It's 9:31. Our time moves quickly during this hour. Well, Bernie, you came back to Fairbanks and got a job. And how long?
It was a temporary job just as salvage work, trying to salvage what we could out of the Smith's gun store that Howard Mackey apparently had worked there, and he hired me to clean that up, work on that.
1940s.
And then, probably I went to work for Herb Pickering at Consumers Co-op again. Mm-hmm. And I was there in the Rose Apartments taking care of the building and working in the grocery store and such as that.
Well, a couple of years after you'd been in Fairbanks, or sometime within the first 2 years, you married.
Yeah, married Dorothy Babe Kettendorf on January 7th of 47.
Uh-huh. And you'd met her outside, though.
Well, I met her when she was... she was 10 years my junior, and so I met her out there, and I think I probably took pictures of her out there as a photographer.
Gee.
And when she came up here with her mother, her mother had been up here before, and sent her up here to start a new life up here. And so we were married in 47, and 48 we had little Robin Rochelle.
Mm-hmm.
And she died in March of 1949, and she is in memory on Birch Hill.
Oh, just a little baby.
If you would like to give you the names of the other three children.
Sure.
Okay, Rebecca, Becky Ray, she worked for the Literacy Council of Alaska now. She's married to Jim Owen, and he's a civil service heavy-duty mechanic at Fort Wainwright. They have two children, Tina Owen, freshman Lathrop, and Keith Owen is a junior in eighth grade junior high. There's, in 1954, Deborah Lou, Debbie, married to Gary Smid, FAA electronic technician, and she has little Laura Rhiannon, and who's 2.5 years old. And then Cindy Sue, married to Fred Bethune, who is a forester at the State Forestry Division, and she worked for the Pioneer Home and for the State Forestry herself for a while. And they all three now have properties on the old Reinier homestead that used to be the Rainbow Valley Ranch, where everybody had such great time back in the late 50s, early 60s. In picnics.
Now, I imagine you took lots of photographs, but I've never seen one. But
I took almost 100 pictures of Rainbow Valley Ranch, the pony rides, the airplane rides for the kids, all the games and all the events of the big picnics that were held there.
This is about 1 mile, Chena Hot Springs Road.
1 mile, Chena Hot. It's in that first swale or valley.
To the left, you're heading out that way.
We named it Rainbow Valley Ranch, and... we had the airplane rides that I bought in Leavenworth, Kansas, and it was shipped in, and it was six airplanes with their own motors that went around, and the children really had a ball with that airplane ride for a number of years.
Now, how did you happen to decide to have a Rainbow Valley Ranch?
Well, I think the Alaska Railroad and the NC Company were responsible for that. They wanted a place to hold a picnic where they could kind of take their shoes off and let their hair down and have a good time. So the Alaska Railroad brought in all their tables, brought in a great big sheet of steel for the fireplace, and that was the start of it. And then we built a dance floor and had a jukebox, and everybody had a good time. Some of the biggest, probably over 1,000 people on some of the picnics. The church, the fraternal organizations, schools, women's clubs, and everybody came out over those years.
And this was your business, though?
But part-time. I was still working full-time at MC Company, so I had to take care of all of the things that goes on to trying to keep this place up and looking nice. I had to do that along with my MC job.
Gee. Now, you did something fascinating in the summer of 1947. You photographed all the children in Fairbanks under 6 years old.
I would assume that I got every child because it was a contest that nobody was obligated for anything. So I think I photographed 320 children under six. And then in Cooper's hardware window, I displayed 6 4x8 sheets of plywood that was completely covered with their pictures.
I've seen that photograph taken of the storefront
of
window.
Of course, I didn't have a second family then, but I had taken some awfully good picture photos, so I thought, why not try that here? So I did, and it went over pretty good.
Gee whiz. Now, in March of 48, you did get an official job. You got paid.
With the Alaska Railroad for 5 years.
That's when you started work with Alaska.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In April, I think, of 48, I started work for the railroad and worked 5 years.
Now, that winter, you were hired as the official photographer for the Winter Ice Carnival.
That very winter, I was official photographer for the 1948 Winter Ice Carnival. And I took then really, you might say, I took my real official and really I took a lot, hundreds and hundreds of pictures of Fairbanks and all the activities that went on during that time.
You got paid to do that. You were hired.
I'm sure that I got probably $200 or $300 check for taking over that job.
And one of those photographs was in the Newsminer, wasn't it?
I imagine a number of those photographs have been in the Newsminer.
Now, normally, though, you didn't get paid. No one did.
No,
just a personal.
No. That's why this negative file that I have, that almost got washed away in a flood my first year in California. It was up in an attic, and here come the river, and there was not 1 second in 48 hours that I didn't know whether that cabin was going to go downstream. And so I saved my negatives there, and those have been collecting dust all these years, and now these pictures are finally coming to light in the Fairbanks Newsminer.
Gee whiz. What are you going to do with your collection?
It's going to go to, is that Rasmussen's library in the university? They've already been promised my collection of negatives.
During your employment with the Alaska Railroad, what did you do for them?
Well, I think that I was first classed as a trucker checker. I checked in, checked out stuff from the freight cars.
Mm-hmm.
I also trucked it into the waiting people who were coming to pick up their freight.
Now, you did, on your own, photograph some construction of a well-known landmark.
Yeah, when they started building the new terminal yards, I thought, I want to do some industrial work just to see what I can do. So I shot probably over 200 pictures of a lot of the phases of the work of that construction, the laying of the track, the building of the buildings, the water tank going up, and I think I climbed to the top of the water tank and took some pictures showing the overall construction. So when I got ready to leave Alaska on January 1st of 66, I asked the railroad if they would give me $75 for my negative collection that I'd taken of all of their holdings here. And they sent me a check for $100. So that helped out a lot.
Now, you were a hard worker, I'm sure, but there was one occasion during your employment with the Alaska Railroad where you sat at your desk But you weren't working for the railroad.
I believe that they were probably aware of the fact some of them working with me. And by the way, my name, Bernie Rainier, came from a gal there by the name of Elaine Griffin. She was the cashier. She says, what is your name? And I said, well, my name, if you can say, Bunny Rainier. And she said, Bunny Rainier? She says, that'll never work here. Because remember, Bunny was the name my mother gave me, and I was known as in all my early years. She says, we'll call you Bernie Rainier. And that was the day, the first day with the Alaska Railroad, that I came Bernie Rainier in Alaska.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Elaine Griffin and Al run the Desert Inn out on Airport Way, Airport Road, I guess you'd call it then. And that's where I got my Bernie name.
I didn't realize that, huh? Well, it was during that time that you entered a contest for the biggest liar in Alaska. What was that all about?
That's where I kind of infringed on the Alaska Railroad time when I wrote that story at my checker's desk. I'm sure that I didn't sit there and turn away customers that wanted to freight the checking truck. I'm sure I took care of that. But during that day, I wrote the story that involved a number of thousands of words and turned it in, not really thinking anything more about it until I was getting ready to photograph the winner of this at the Nevada Bar. I was sitting up in the rafters with my speed graphic train, my flash bulb ready to go, and they called me out of the rafters and said, you are the winner. It was all a frame-up. Everybody knew, even my wife knew, that I was the winner and that I was going to be called out of the rafters up there where I was getting ready to shoot the winner.
Right.
So somebody turned around with a camera and took my picture.
You won the contest.
Yeah.
Huh. Now, actually, that got a lot of publicity for the Alaska Railroad, that story. But there were 3,276 entries of tall tales.
Yeah, right.
And yours was titled?
Moose Creek Charlie and the Quick Freeze.
Uh-huh. And that is a wonderful story.
Yeah, and I was surprised when Moose Creek Charlie told me this story, and I believed every word of it, and I still do. If anybody doubts that, why, just ask me.
For anybody who hasn't read it, there are things like on the railroad, when the steam would freeze and they would get short of fuel, they would just saw it up into logs and re-burn this steam, and it would melt, and then you'd have more power.
Yeah, something like that.
And you cut chunks of ice out of the...
Yeah.
Well, the steam that came out the top was blocking the way of going through
the
tunnels.
The smoke that came out of the stacks was frozen so solid that when it hit the tunnels, it would tear the top of the tunnel out. So they had to hire smoke cutters to cut that off before they entered the tunnels. Otherwise, you know what happens, they just stop dead.
And of course, the Northern Lights froze.
Yeah, they cut out chunks of Northern Lights for Christmas trees that winter, and it was fantastic.
And the sled dogs froze in their tracks.
Yeah. And that's all the truth. I want you to know that.
Well, it's a good thing that people in the lower 48, got a very accurate impression.
Yeah, right.
Well, this, you had no idea what sort of celebrity this was about to lead to.
No, because I had to go out to a Hollywood bank. I was slated to go on some program. I thought it was Queen for a Day, but can you imagine me, Queen for a Day? Anyway, Don's breakfast or something, morning, that breakfast show.
Sure, I can't think of the name,
but either, right? Uh-huh. Don McNeil.
Yes.
Okay, I was supposed to go out there, but they didn't get me on that because I was shy of anything like that. And I went out and picked up my money at a Hollywood bank, and then I went up in the mountains of Sky Forest, and I was in the heaviest snowfall more than I'd ever seen in Fairbanks. I went up there in 8 foot of snow. They tunneled into their businesses up at Lake Arrowhead. So I was glad to get back to Fairbanks where there wasn't so darn much snow.
Well, I'm looking. You've got all the clippings that came out in all the cities that you visited during that trip outside.
Uh-huh.
And they really, it was a big celebrity tour. I mean, you have pictures of you with your parka on holding headlines. This is the San Francisco Chronicle, January 12, 1949. Your big picture of you, Berman M. Rainier. And you kind of told some tall tales on your tour, too.
Yeah, well, they really spread it thick on my way down. Mm-hmm. And then they took a picture of me in front of the courthouse in Seattle in a foot of snow. I couldn't have picked a worse year to won that contest because it was cold all the way down into California.
Now this is, I don't know what paper this out of because the Dateline is gone, but it's one of the California papers and it's titled, Alaska's Biggest Liar Thinks It's Balmy Here. Oh, this is Los Angeles,
yeah,
California.
Yeah, right.
And listen to what you were telling the people. Stepping from a Western Airlines plane, the 35-year-old champion teller of tales pulled the hood of his reindeer park about his neck, slipped on his wolfskin mitts, and stamped his caribou muckluck-shod feet to accommodate photographers. Think this is cold, he scoffed. Why, in Alaska, this is a balmy spring day. It was 44 below when I hit Fairbanks, one of the warmest winters in years. Listen to what else you told him. If you wouldn't experience cold weather, you should have been in the territory of the year of the quick freeze. Why, the mercury fell so fast it tore the thermometers off the wall.
And that was when it snowed in Los Angeles.
That's amazing.
I was the only one walking down the street in mucklucks, in a parkie, and wolf mitts that was dressed for the weather.
That's funny. And, of course, this story lives on and on. And
yes.
It's been recently published in little booklet form.
Yeah, and we sure want to talk about the Literacy Council of Alaska and what they did with that little booklet.
Uh-huh.
And they still have some copies, and they certainly did a lot. They revived Moose Creek Charlie in a big way in 82, and they put this booklet out. And I would hope that someday the final curtain will fall on Moose Creek Charlie, and they will, maybe my daughter Becky, who works there, will reach up on the shelf and pull down that last copy of Moose Creek Charlie, and that will be the curtain call for Moose Creek Charlie.
You never thought you'd live with that story the rest of your life?
No, I never did.
Well, that story is published in the May 1985 edition of Alaska Sportsman.
Alaska Magazine.
Oh, excuse me, Alaska Magazine.
Right, uh-huh.
Huh.
And they did a real good job. Four pages of The Biggest Liar in Alaska in the Alaska Magazine. And the staff artist really, really did a super job with a large full-page cartoon of certain phases of the lie.
Bernie, I wanted to ask you some more about your photography. What, you never did it to make a living at it. You just took these pictures, which we're so grateful for, because they're wonderful. You had a good eye for composition, developed your own darkroom technique. What were your favorite memories about certain pictures you've taken, maybe of people or places?
Well, of course, my biggest memories now is coming up in the Fairbanks News Miner, because those pictures are finally coming to life after all these years. I'm reliving the pictures, really, that's on the in the Heartland Magazine.
Because you're just now pulling these out.
Yeah, they see, none of them's ever seen print before.
What are your favorite ones?
Well, I suppose, my golly, there's so many. I suppose the picture of Tess Snyder dancing with Governor Greening out at the Golf and Country Club way back in 48 was one of my favorites, because he was a celebrity and she was pretty, and it just made a real good shot. And then I remember the picture of Vera Siders and Dan Bode, the one that we lost at Valdez in the earthquake and the tidal wave.
Uh-huh.
That's one of my favorite candid shots of people.
I have a stack of photographs in front of me right now. They're just wonderful. Herb Hilscher, Gareth Wright's team, 1948, Eva McGowan, G.I. Jill.
Yes, G.I. Jill.
Now, I played in a recording of her at KFAR at that same year, happened to have had an old recording. A Flood, here's the old, here's Mike Agbaba, 1948, Native Family. Here's you and Babe in Alabama.
Yes,
Kitty
right.
Kittendorf. Here's the little kittens.
Oh, yes, my favorite of the three kittens. Uh-huh.
This is really something. Well, this is really We're very lucky.
Speaking of Alabama, I'd like to thank Dermot Cole for a splendid article on old Alabama. He used my pictures to illustrate the article, and I'll not forget that he did such a good job on old Alabama, alive and good.
Jim Cassidy,
that's one of my favorite pictures of a real nice gentleman.
Here's Al Bramstad covering, looks like, dog races.
Yeah, right.
Gee whiz. And, of course, you took lots of wonderful photographs of your own family.
Yeah, right.
The Carnival Queen contest. And gee whiz. Lots of children. This is quite a fabulous collection.
You probably got the picture of the five queens,
mm-hmm.
or at least Kathleen Clawson, who is now Kathleen Hutchison, and her royal court,
mm-hmm.
four 18-year-old high school girls.
We're going to take our final break. I'm talking with Bernie Rainier on Meet a Pioneer. We'll be back in just a few moments. When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble. Meet a Pioneer is about Alaskan pioneers and the history of our last frontier. And Last Frontier Realty celebrates the past and its link to our future. You're invited to visit their office at the corner of Airport and Barnett, an original Fairbanks home completely restored, including archival photographs of the interior. On the Last Frontier Realty staff are some of the most effective salespeople in Fairbanks. They employ the most up-to-date marketing plans that work for you. And don't you enjoy their friendly messages on their sign outside? Please stop by and visit Last Frontier Realty, proud of our history and proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. Meet a Pioneer with Bernie Rainier. This very fascinating discussion. I didn't realize, Bernie, until you just said it, that these photographs, other than an occasional incident, had not seen print before. It's special. I know it must be a thrill for you to see them. Now, when you left, you did leave Alaska on an interesting trip in the winter
mm-hmm.
of 66.
Well, I hate to say this, but I wanted so much to leave Alaska because of 24 winters being a prisoner in the wintertime. I couldn't stand it anymore, and it was 55 below when I left Fairbanks in a little red Volkswagen, 1961, by myself, with really not very much emergency gear. And when I got to Tok Junction, it was 64 below the next morning, and I don't know how a man could be possessed with the desire to go in that kind of weather. I got down to Destruction Bay, and that was just about what it would have been to me. But my entire system froze up and pumped all of my oil out of the crankcase, the air breather. And I got that fixed, and even then, at 60 below, I was crazy enough to start out on the trip down, and I went 2,500 miles, and it never got warmer than 25 below zero. And to make matters worse, somebody, the mechanic at Destruction Bay took my hat and my flashlight, and I had no hat to cover up my ears and no flashlight because it was dark. Now we're on our last 10 minutes, aren't we?
About five. You had reached the last straw.
Yeah.
You were going out no matter what.
All right, but listen, before we leave, I want to say to editor Tom Gresham of the Alaska Magazine, I really appreciated this current edition that he's put about the Biggest Liar in the Alaska Magazine. And I want to say to Terrence Cole, editor of Alaska Journal, he's running in this current spring issue of Alaska Journal, something titled The Fairbanks in the 1940s, and it shows 11 of my photographs, and I feel real proud of that. And of course, we don't want to forget Tricia Olson of Heartland Magazine. Mm-hmm. It is she that is really bringing my pictures to the forefront and letting people see them for the first time, people who made up Alaska in those years.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that very much.
Oh, they're wonderful. You got an advanced copy of that Alaska Journal here.
Those are the tear sheets.
Uh-huh.
When I came through Seattle, that's all they had. The book wasn't out yet, but Terrence Cole made sure that I got a copy of that.
A photo looking down 2nd Avenue, Main Commercial Street, in downtown Fairbanks, taken during the 40s. One other thing you did that was really good thing that you did, Bernie, but you dated and wrote down the names of the people in your photographs.
Well,
on each one.
I did, but a lot of that's from memory.
Oh, uh-huh.
But so easy to remember, for me, to remember dates and names that is far back. And yet I can be introduced today to somebody and I'll forget the name now.
Uh-huh.
So luckily, people who really were a part of my pictures, I could come up with pretty much who they were and when I took the picture.
Well, it's a special collection that will go into the permanent collection of the Rasmus
and Roger. Yeah, right. Now, in 47, four of us jumped on the freights with our camera equipment and walked down the railroad, hitchhiked down the railroad on the train, walked clear across the Glen Island, the Tok Cutoff, back to the Richardson, and then back up to Fairbanks with cameras. And that was quite an experience. We had to eat bear meat. We ran out of food, had to kill a bear. We'd walk along the road with the bear's feet, you know, how much they resemble a human foot, sticking out of our pack down the road, and it must have presented quite a spectacle, us walking along and living on bear meat. We ran out, I don't even know whether we had salt and pepper to season that bear meat with.
And
but that was one of the things that a lot of pictures were taken. Reb Riddick went with us, and Reb Riddick is the one that had the cover photo on March 3rd of all the skaters on the Chena ice. You remember that color picture?
Sure.
All right.
Oh,
Reb Riddick lives here in Fairbanks now, and he took that picture. He was one of them that went on this trip.
Oh, my goodness.
And Alan Brown was one of the others, and he lost his life in an airplane accident at Phillips Field. He came in and misjudged landing and hit the tower, and he and his girlfriend from Ladd or Fort Wainwright were killed in that accident.
Huh.
So two, and the other fellow was with me, with Kettendorf, Jerry Kettendorf. He just passed away recently, and that obituary was in the Newsminer. Jerry
Kettendorf.
That would be my wife's brother.
Uh-huh.
Babe's brother.
Gee whiz. Well, you live in California now.
Mm-hmm.
And you come to visit your family.
Right.
This is really nice. It's certainly, I'm glad that you've taken the opportunity to come beat on my mm-hmm. program. It's been fun to talk to you. There are more stories, and it's been fascinating. Oh, really quickly, tell the story about your parents getting...
Oh, yeah. All right. They divorced in 1929.
Uh-huh.
They both had two new spouses. And then, after 43 years, my mother and father remarried and lived their last 9 years together. Probably happier then than they were maybe when they were first married. And they died 9 days apart in 81.
My goodness. You had some very interesting stories in your life. Bernie Reiner, it's been a pleasure to have you here. And are you still taking photographs while you're here in Fairbanks?
No. I wanted to, but I've got my cameras, and I just sometimes I want to cry when I see Fairbanks now. It's changed that much. All the things that I used to love so much are just no more. So I'm kind of turned off, and I hate to say that as my parting word, but I know progress is bound to happen, but I just think of the things that I used to love so much about Fairbanks, and that meant so much in the pioneering way. Now there's no more pioneering here, and I kind of feel sad about it. I really do. And I think a lot of us old-timers feel that way. It may be with the old-timers here that grow up as it progresses is all right. They don't notice it as much as me coming up and then finding out how much has changed. I can't even find my way around now. I have to have somebody take me around. When I came here, there was 4,000 people. What is the population now? There was only one main school when I came here. Now, how many grammar schools is there, and how many high schools, junior high? My goodness. It's amazing what has happened. This means that I should never have gone away. See? I should have grown up with it.
Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
From ABC News, I'm John Grimes. Good news for the hundreds of families in West Philadelphia who lost their homes in Monday's fire. After taking a look at the devastation, Housing Secretary Samuel Pierce had an announcement.
I intend to make available from my discretionary fund $1 million to help with the rehabilitation of the area that has been affected.
Meantime, Secretary Pierce says the government will also provide rent vouchers so the homeless can find places to live temporarily. Pierce adds,